Hello and welcome to the Heartistic Podcast. I'm your host, Stevie Sound, and today I have the wonderful Ali Redden with me, singer-songwriter from Toronto. How are you, Ali?
I'm doing great, Stevie. Thanks for having me today.
No problem. Thank you for coming. I really appreciate you for coming. You know, when was it? You had an album release party for Root Rot, which is your...
Yeah, back in September.
September, that's when it was. Perfect. And so I remember Alex Southee from like when I was playing in the circuit in Toronto. And I love this music because I have a very good friend named Johnny Starks, and they were on the same bill. So I rekindled with him, and he was ranting about you a lot. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go check this out. Now, it was the smallest bar I think I've ever seen in Toronto, but it was rammed, number one. And it was literally like what you go out for. It was literally like a singer-songwriter show, one person there, well, with two people there with guitars. And it was phenomenal. It was the first time that I was actually like coming back out and meeting or going to like view Toronto creatives. And, you know, I'm really happy that you were the first one that I got to see, because your music really spoke to me. We'll talk definitely about that later. First, I want to find out who you are. Introduce yourself to the people a little bit. Let us know just a little bit about yourself.
Okay, awesome. Well, yeah, my name is Ali Redden. I am a singer-songwriter based in Toronto, as Stevie mentioned. I work full-time in the non-for-profit sector for a gender equity organization. I'm a super passionate person, sort of about everything I do, whether it's career or music or family or friends. And I've been playing and performing music for quite some time now. Started playing piano as a kid, picked up the guitar around the fifth, sixth grade, and started going from there, and just have always loved to sing and play and write and feel through music. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. I know we'll get into some more specifics as we chat today, but there's a little intro.
Absolutely. So was this kind of like, was it embedded in your family, or was it just kind of like an outlet type thing that the creativity of music started?
So my mom is a kindergarten teacher and an amazing educator. And like, she always did like the sing-songy kind of things, like teaching you to tie your shoes with music and like lullabies and all the kids stuff. Right. So music was definitely a part of my life from a really young age. She always had a piano in her classroom, and she'd sort of play songs with her students. So that's what got me on piano lessons. But outside of that, none of my family's like, none of them play or perform, but they are really musical. My dad is like the best whistler I've ever heard in my life. He's perfect pitch. And a lot of my music influence are just like the music I listen to. I consider like classic rock and dad rock because my dad was like a huge influence on me as a young kid when I started listening and really getting into tunes. So I, while nobody else in my family really plays or performs, I definitely feel like everybody loves music a lot and has always been super supportive of my pursuit kind of in the music area.
I'm on it. So it seems like you had a very like supportive family. That's very good. I do. You were saying a lot of things. So you were saying one thing that, you know, so even though your family might not be performing or making it a like lucrative business within music, they're still very musical. And that's exactly what music is. It's universal. It's literally a universal language that we all definitely communicate with. And as you just proven, you know, their love of music and their influence of music has basically made you go further into it. It's exactly what happened with me. Like, I'm sure that me and you have the same classic dad rock vibes, like Zeppelin and all that, and like Dylan and all that and whatever. It's so crazy because now dad rock has changed. Blink-182, Nirvana, like I'm a dad. I listen to all that stuff.
I like to think of dad rock. I consider grandfathers are also dads. So like I go way back, like 50s, 60s is amazing. 70s, 80s, 90s is kind of where my parents are. But that you're so right. There's people in their early 30s and dad rock is totally Blink now. Yeah.
50s and 60s Christmas music, like swing Christmas music, is the goddamn greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, I love Christmas music, but this year I was just kind of like, wow, these bass lines and like, holy crap, you know what I mean? So, so we talked about, so you talked about basically the various instruments that you've learned or played. What is your favorite one? What do you connect with the most?
I would say, I think when I started playing acoustic guitar, I really started to just write and sing from my heart a little bit more. I think piano was definitely like the most classically learned and trained instrument that I was on because it was my first instrument. So I really learned how to, you know, read music and a little bit about theory and was going through sort of the standardized learning. And I think there's so much value in that type of introduction to music, but it wasn't until I started, and then I went over to the bass and I learned a lot about just how guitars work, and learning the neck was a really kind of nice skill to learn on the bass, so that by the time I was moving over to play the acoustic guitar, which was just about a year after I picked up a bass, the reason I transitioned is I really wanted to sing along, and I found that like bass lines and vocal melodies sometimes really conflict, and it's a pretty hard skill when you're like a young kid figuring out music to play a really groovy bass line and also sing vocals sometimes. So I wanted to sing along. Some of my influences back when I was like in grade 7 picking up an acoustic guitar for the first time was like early Taylor Swift, and just wanted to like strum and sing to myself. So my parents drove me to Costco and we picked up an acoustic guitar from there, and that was my first love with an instrument. Like I really, really fell in love with playing guitar and worked really hard at getting better at playing it. And then it was also kind of the first instrument that I really wrote my own music on. So when it comes to comfort, like I will always be the most comfortable with an acoustic guitar in my hand. I bought an electric guitar throughout the pandemic, and I've been working on building that skill as well. It's different, but it's awesome. And I'm definitely less confident at playing it, but I really, really love it. And it kind of speaks to sort of my sound a little bit more than just an acoustic guitar does sometimes. So yeah.
Let's definitely talk about some influence. I will start with the fact that obviously it's singer-songwriter, kind of folky blues rock. Am I getting this right, or would you consider yourself something else?
Yeah, I always kind of say like indie folk and a bit of rock. I'm trying to move towards rock. I was definitely sitting more in the like folk strummy songwriting before, but yeah, indie folk rock maybe.
Yeah, well, there's some songs that you do have on the album, which we'll talk about later, that you do have, you know, you're very mellow folky indie, but then you do have some power to some of them. I think it was Root Rot that had some power to it, and it sounded kind of electric-y, and it was really, really, really good. So where did these influences come for your music? Where did the influence from Root Rot come from? And then are there any new influences that you feel yourself heading towards?
Yeah, good question. I would say that like in general, writing music, I've been influenced by some incredible singer-songwriters from sort of the dad rock era, just in just the 60s, 70s, 80s. So big Joni Mitchell fan. But I would also say like my parents and what they listened to had an influence on sort of how I feel music. So the band, Crosby, Stills and Nash. I think my dad like was a huge CCR fan, so I love CCR. So that's where some of that kind of folky rock sound comes from, I think. And then when I think about more current influences, like I was a huge Lumineers fan when they put out their first album. I thought it was just beautiful and such an amazing storytelling album. And I went and saw them on their very first tour when they played in Hamilton at Cops Coliseum. And
aren't
it was like
so amazing live. They're so amazing live. Like I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about them live.
Yeah, so I saw their first tour, and then I've seen them like 3 times since, because I'm just a through and through Lumineers fan. And every album they put out is different, but such an incredible, like I said, storytelling experience. And I just love the folk music behind it. So, yeah. And then along with the Lumineers, there's some really cool kind of more current bands that I really vibe with. I love Big Thief. I really just like, yeah, some indie folk rock bands. And then when it came to writing Root Rot, I think my influence, like, again, really came from that indie folk scene. Bands like the Lumineers, the Strumbellas, that were doing a really good job of bringing that kind of folk indie rock sound forward. But I was also listening to a lot more sort of alternative and just indie rock without the folk stuff. So some of my favorite bands over the past few years have been like Peach Pit. I've gotten back into some of the bands from the 90s that I liked, like Modest Mouse and Pavement. And so listening to that, I wanted to bring in, yeah, a little bit more of those kind of fun electric guitar rock sounds to the work that I was doing with writing Root Rot. I wrote it mostly all on the acoustic guitar. And so moving into sort of a production mindset, which I had never done before, was a lot of fun because it allowed me to, yeah, experiment with different tones and sounds and work with my amazing producer, Alex Purcell, who worked on the project with me, to just really find sort of those tones. And I would send him like a Peach Pit song. He'd be like, the way the guitar sounds in the intro, like I want to hear some of that coming through on Swim, for example. Right. And then we'd work on some of those sounds and try to find the right tones for my album.
That's awesome. That's great. The process is great, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's cool. It was daunting for someone who had never gotten into recording. Like I've always just kind of written and performed, and a lot of my performing throughout university and as I was getting used to being a musician, I guess, was like sitting in the corner of a pub with an acoustic guitar plugged into a small PA. And just that was like how I used to gig before I moved to Toronto. And there's nothing wrong with it. I still love doing that. And whenever I get invited back, I'm happy to go. But yeah, since moving to Toronto and meeting a lot more folks within the music scene and connecting with some incredible people, and then also experiencing a pandemic when venues were shut down, it just gave me some time to shift towards recording and getting kind of a personal archive of some of the music I had been writing and feeling for the past few years.
Yeah, and I don't think people kind of really get what like the pandemic did to musicians. Like musicians and artists, you guys need to express. To feel better, we need to express, whether it's in our fingers or it's in our voice. We need to express ourselves, or else it really like weighs down on us. So the resilience in you to keep going and to keep writing through a pandemic and all this, you know, nonsense that we had to deal with, that's really strong and that's really good. That's really how someone learns about the creative that they are or the creative that they're going to be. You know what I mean? Let's chat about that show that I saw you at, the September show. What was the bar called again?
So it was called the Tonight Bar, Tonight Live Happenings Bar. Okay. It's a really, really cool spot. I really, really appreciated getting to perform there. I had heard about it. I can't remember if it was through maybe Alex had performed there before, Alex Southey, but there's also some other friends who had some small gigs there. Found out about it just by seeing some posts from other folks who had performed there. When I got in touch with the booker, you know, they book comedy shows, they book really kind of small, intimate performances. But I really, really liked the vibe and I just felt super welcomed there. So when I kind of reached out and said that I wanted to host a little EP release party to celebrate this milestone as an artist and play some of the songs off the EP live, I was really stoked to get to do it in that intimate, cool Parkdale setting, and my family came out and my friends came out, my softball team came out, like everybody came, and it was so fun. And it was just a night full of good times and good music. And Alex Southey, who's a very close person to me, like we work together and he runs this incredible communal open mic, he opened the night for me. So it was really fun.
It was so intimate. It was so like, it was Toronto. It was literally like Toronto creative. It was so, for me, the first time just going to see a show, I haven't been out in a long time either. So I just went to go see the show and it was like, man, I felt emotion. It was so great. You did a lot of songs from the 90s. You did two songs from the 90s that were like, holy crap, that's generational music. And like when I heard that, I was like, that's smart. This woman is smart. She is very smart right now. You know what I mean? Because like you had the whole bar chanting the song. It was that song, What's Going On, right? Like, holy. I still have that on video. I still play that back sometimes. It was that powerful.
It's one of my favorite to sing. And nobody needs to know the words because at the chorus, you're just singing, hey, hey, yeah, over and over. It's so funny.
Yeah, I love like the intro you gave. As soon as you gave that intro, I'm like, it's that song for sure. It's exactly that song she's going to play. And it was great. It was such a good, refreshing style. It was refreshing to see someone do that in a different way. And like your voice just carries on and your voice is beautiful. Thank it's amazing. You. That's yeah, absolutely. No problem. I'm sure you've got this. Like a lot of people get this. At first, I kind of got Serena Ryder vibes. And then maybe I was just like, I think I'm being stereotypical of the little woman on stage. blondish, you know what I mean? Like playing guitar, I'm like, maybe. And then I started listening more, and that's exactly why I love that I'm doing this interview, because I got to say to you, you do have a very defined sound, and it sounds really, really, really good. I really enjoy it. Your voice just carries on, and like the emotion in your voice, it's very
pleasant.
Thank
you very much. I've never been compared to Serena Ryder before, but that's cool. Thank you.
Never. Okay, so I was stereotyping.
No, it's cool. She's such a powerhouse. It's cool.
She's amazing. I love her. There's a song. If anyone has ever heard the song by The Trues and Serena Ryder, I don't know. I forgot what it's called, but it's like number 4 on The Trues album. Oh, I'm going
to
crash.
Yeah, send it to me. I'll check it out.
I'm actually going to find it. So the next question that I will ask you is, every creative has a creative process. What creative process do you use? Do you, you know, throw yourself into a room with your favorite toys, or do you like just listen to a song? How do you get into the creative flow?
So songwriting for me, I mean, playing music is creative. You don't have to be a writer to be a creative. And I think, you know, you don't even have to write your own melodies. You can just have fun with an instrument, and that's creative in its own. But for me, writing really helped me tap into kind of finding my own within music. And I think when I started writing, it came from a place of kind of what you said earlier, just like an outlet, a release. I was never one to like sit down and talk about my feelings a ton as a kid, but I was one to go to my room and just sort of like write in my journal. And I think when I started playing bass guitar and getting a sense of rhythm, I started to realize that like, my writing could be more poetic. My writing could have some rhythm. My writing could potentially fit on top of a 4-chord pattern that I like. And it eventually turned into that. So I'm kind of a weird person. A lot of people are music first, lyric second. I'm like, when I'm feeling a lot of feelings, I'm going to go write about it. And then I'm going to think about how I can kind of fit those feelings into even more emotional release, which comes through, you know, a minor chord that really makes you feel some kind of way, or a weird 7th chord that makes you like excited and want to get to the next one. So I feel like the music has always come second, the feelings and the words and really just getting my brain out onto paper has been step one in my process. And then step two has been finding the rhythm within those words and thinking about how they can fit into some chords and some music that really matches how the song feels to me.
That's really cool. See, everyone has a different creative process. That's
it's
really good that you actually just brought that up, because while I was listening to Root Rot, the EP, it's essentially a breakup album, but but it was invigorating and empowering. It was more like a recovery breakup album. What I kind of realized about the music was the lyrics and the concept were breakup and more so sad, kind of like recovery sad, you know what I mean? But the music, yeah, even though you kind of start your music off with the minors and the like sadder sounding songs, the flow of the song is actually positive. Maybe that's just me, but you know, there's, I'm trying to think where, I think it was the last one, which is, so there's Swim, name, let me just,
in order, I think it goes Swim, Bittersweet.
That one.
I might even be getting this wrong.
Yeah.
The last one is Root Rot.
Okay. So on my, that's why I got, scoot over, because that's why I forgot, because on mine Root Rot is first and Bittersweet is last. So Bittersweet, the first maybe like minute or almost 2 minutes, it sounds like a sad kind of like feeling song, but by the end of it, you're kind of on a journey. You're kind of on a journey to recovery, on a journey to, you know what I mean? And I got that through MTL. MTL was really kind of like really emotional and passionate, you know what I mean? But it was uplifting. The flow of it got you, just kept going. It wasn't like I'm not listening to a sad song and feeling sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'll continue on talking about Root Rot. What was the main influence based on that? And where did you get the name Root Rot? Like, I know Root Rot, obviously, but you know, what metaphor, how would you explain it metaphorically?
So that is definitely a breakup album through and through. I went through kind of a big life change just a couple of years ago now in the middle of the pandemic. And I was living with a partner that I kind of saw my whole life with in front of me. I was like, this is my person. You know, I'm going to do life with this guy. And yeah, I just was caught off guard one day and it didn't work out. He didn't want to keep doing life with me. And it really just took me out. It like, I was so taken back. I didn't know what to do with myself. And it just took a lot of just like time to heal and rebuild and realize that like I don't want to be with someone who doesn't want me and know that they want me fully and forever. And so, you know, back to the drawing board, back to like working on myself and rebuilding and regrowing kind of in a lot of ways. So I, on top of being a, you know, a passionate musician, I'm also a passionate crazy plant lady. I think I have like 18 plants throughout my tiny little Toronto apartment. So, and yeah, I like love taking care of houseplants. And I was sitting in my apartment, I was journaling, I was feeling really sad and just like thinking about how frustrating it was that my life felt uprooted when this breakup happened. And I was looking at my wall, I've got some jars that hang, and you see like new roots growing when they're propagating new plants. And I just felt like I was a tiny little cutting of a plant and I needed to reroot somewhere else. I needed to find better ground. I needed to like move on from the rotten soil that I was sitting in before, and just start regrowing and growing stronger and better and in a healthier way. So that's where the metaphor behind root rot comes from. I'm literally a crazy plant lady. But I own it and it just helped me. I think growth is a theme throughout the album. Resilience is a theme throughout the album, getting through something tough and coming out a little bit stronger. And coming out a little bit, you know, just growing in a new way. I wouldn't say in a better way, but in a new way. And that was the theme. That was kind of what kept me grounded as I was writing through the album was these aren't just breakup songs. These are songs of breakup and then what? And the then what part was just moving forward in a strong and healthy way.
Absolutely. And you did that via music. You see what I mean? Like,
Yeah, it's so healing. It's so healing to get through tough stuff and just have that outlet to put your feelings down and to feel really proud about it too. Like I appreciate that now I can look at this EP as a chapter of my life and it'll always represent something hard, but something that I got through. And I think recording music is really special because yeah, I just now have a personal archive of songs that only existed up here. And I'm really proud of them. So yeah.
and you're probably now maybe a little bit less worried to kind of not hurt. We're always worried to hurt. It always hurts to hurt. But
Yeah.
now that you
Yeah.
know you have like an outlet and you know you've been through these processes, it just gets a little bit easier. It's literally kind of like we say, right? An outlet. That's awesome. It's kind of like I really want to say I'm gonna listen to it because I can't remember kind of what it is. So give me a second.
No worries.
All right, so I want to say to you have to make a merch shirt, and it has to be the chorus of Root Rot. Like, I want people to fucking scream that out.
Yeah. And so I'll go find better ground and I'll dig down and hope my new roots won't rot.
Yeah, like, for everyone that's listening, please, like, write that down in your journal. Mark it Ali Reddin, obviously, because she created it, but write it down and like keep that with you. I wrote it down. I won't lie to you. I wrote it down. I signed your name. And I kind of do that. You know, I kind of read the lyrics that I get from people that really stick with me. That's amazing. Like I don't have kind of the same problems that you do, but listening to the music and listening to that type of music really even helped me. You know what I mean? With my problem. So it was kind of.
Well, you can apply that message to so many things. It doesn't have to be about a broken heart. If something's not working for you in life, whether it's like a job or a situation you're in or like a friendship that's not serving you anymore, like you just need to recognize that you can go find somewhere better to kind of dig your roots into and grow from there. And so, yeah, that was kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah, wicked. Okay. All right. Let me know about some of the Toronto creatives or Toronto musicians, as you say, because you're a musician artist that you love to play with. So, what are some of your most favorite acts in the city?
Okay, good question. I'll start with just referencing I like to call it the Imperial Pub family. But Alex Southey, who I first met through nonprofit work, we used to work at the same charity. He runs a kind of open musicians night, jam night, open mic kind of thing at the Imperial Pub, the back room of the Imperial Pub off of Yonge and Dundas Square. So it's like just a Tuesday night thing. I think it happens twice the month now. But everybody who's been coming out to that kind of on a consistent basis, we've just grown really close and met some really supportive, incredible people. I know that the Howling Gales have been out to it. Alex is like a great networker and has met some incredible people from around the city, and brings them out to that night pretty often. So it's been cool to get to meet people through that. One amazing band that I have grown to love through my friend Olivia, who comes to that same jam night, is they're called Wax Limbs. They're just really cool to check out live. Such a great performance. They wear like really dope masks and the music is amazing. So I love Wax Limbs. I obviously love Alex Southey. My friend Leash right now is working on recording some music. It's not out yet, but I'm really excited for when that comes out. You can check her out. I think her Instagram's Leash Does Music. And it's just really, really great stuff. And then, yeah, some other local acts that I've been able to connect with, and go see and really have enjoyed performing alongside and going to just check them out. Holly Clausius, she's a really talented singer-songwriter, and pretty prominent in the queer community, which has been really cool, to see her sort of engage such a great network of people. There's an incredible singer-songwriter who's no longer in Toronto, and who I miss very dearly, but her name's Kylie Kinnon, and she's got an amazing voice and just some really beautiful music. And I met her initially through this thing called So Far Sounds. I used to volunteer with So Far. They put on pop-up gigs around Toronto. And that's how I met Alex Purcell, who is the incredible producer behind my Root Rot EP. And he's just like an amazing, multi-talented, multi-instrumentalist, amazing friend as well. So I've named a bunch of people. I could keep going. I mean, there's some great local acts. I honestly could go for hours and days. I got a shout out the band called The Converts. My cousin Harry plays bass for The Converts, and I've got to join them on a couple bills, and it's just been such a good time, and I really appreciate the opportunities that they've given me too. So yeah, those are just some to name a few, but I mean, there's some incredible talent in this city. There's always cool shows. I think I'm going to check out CJ Wiley tonight at the Baby G. So I've been really enjoying getting to know the music scene here, after the pandemic, as things opened up, because I moved right as everything shut down to Toronto. So it's been a fun past year and a half while venues have been up and running again to really get to know the talent in the city and to connect with other artists through jam nights, open mic nights, just going out to shows and doing stuff like this where you get to have conversations with people kind of in the industry and in the scene.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about Toronto. We're all majorly friendly. You know what I mean? We're all kind of in the sense of we all have the same passion. We all have the same commonalities. And like, that's what makes us get along so much. The Imperial Pub, that's amazing. I was actually seeing that. It's like, wow, every time you guys have it, it's the same people. It's consistency. It's beautiful. It's what should be happening. It's amazing.
What I love about it too is that like new folks walk in. Sometimes they're not even there for the music, but they hear it and they come and then they'll hop up on stage and share their talent. And so while it's like the core group that kind of comes out every Tuesday for fun and to connect and to be friends, there's also just like new talent walking in the door. And it's just really cool. It's a good environment for sure.
Absolutely. That's what's so wonderful about Toronto. You can literally go to every bar and there's like talent. It's not just like, okay, what are these guys doing? It's literally like, oh wow, this is great. Like, I remember one time I walked in like four different bars and it was like, all this music is amazing. Like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like,
Totally.
why are we just hearing the same thing over and over and over? But again, that's not me to speak on or speak about. We've said this a couple of times. It's came up a couple of times. The other Ali Redden is basically works for a charity. Now, explain exactly what you do, because this is charity is also great, but when you actually like manage and do something for charity, that's great. That also coincides with your songwriting and probably your creativity as well, right? Let's know about that.
Yeah, so I studied in my undergrad a program called International Development. It was really just focused on understanding why, inequity is so prominent around the world and why certain countries and populations of people go through what they go through in terms of the shitty things that exist around the world. So when I was studying that within my degree, you had to pick an area of emphasis. And I truly believe that the best work is done when it is informed by the folks who can connect with sort of the mission the most. And so development work or any type of community service work has to be informed by the community that the work is serving. And so as a young woman going through my undergrad degree, I decided to focus on gender and development. So I started working in the gender equity space. I was really focused on using whatever skills I had to serve organizations that were fighting for a more equitable world for young women, for gender diverse folks, non-binary folks, trans folks, and people who are marginalized based on who they are, because gender is part of our identity, and it's something that we should be proud of and be able to express in whatever way we want. So gender equity is really one of the things I'm most passionate about, and it's driven my work for the past few years. I've worked for a few different charities based out of Toronto since graduating, and I'm currently working for an organization called Fora. And I love my job. I love my team. I love the communities that we get to connect with through our work. It's just an incredible organization. We provide training and leadership development opportunities to young women and gender diverse folks all around the world, but also here across Canada, to really ensure that decision-making spaces like boardrooms, like the halls of government, like big companies, like all the people who make the decisions that really impact the world around them, we want to diversify those spaces, because the people who've been making those decisions, if you look across board of directors in Canada, they're just all really old white guys who are who are speaking from their own perspectives. But I think it's important to diversify those spaces so that new perspectives are at the board table and that decisions being made aren't just benefiting one group or another. So that's really what Fora does, is we provide training for young people who are gender diverse or marginalized based on their gender, because we want them to be included in those spaces and we want their voices to be heard at those tables to make those choices and make those decisions.
Absolutely. That's amazing. That's exactly what needs to be done in our world and in every aspect, every industry. That needs to be done in the film, that needs to be done in the music, in most importantly,
absolutely,
what you guys are doing right now. But it's funny because when you said it's ran by a bunch of old white guys, so is the music industry. So is the
I was gonna say, as a female, you know, musician in Toronto, like I'm very much a part of a minority group as queer music. Like there's so many queer musicians who are also marginalized. Like you look across the bills, even trying to find band members to build a band with. I made a post on my Instagram story, and everyone responding to me was a guy, and I was like, this is great, but I'd love to diversify a band or diversify a bill and just include different types of people, because I think that different types of people bring really incredible different types of music to these spaces, different skills, different lived experiences that create just an amazing, beautiful thing. And the less opportunities that those folks have, the less their voices are heard. And that's just not fair. So that's why I really believe in the work that I do. One other thing about the work that I do outside of music is that I'm a fundraiser. So my job within these organizations is to build partnerships, to apply to grants, and to really just bring in money so that we can pay for the programming that impacts the communities that we work with. And I think as a musician, it's a really important skill to have, is fundraising, it's grant writing, it's understanding what opportunities are out there to help you do what you love doing. Because there are a lot of grants available to Canadian musicians, but a lot of Canadian musicians don't know where to look for them, how to write them. So I encourage folks in the music industry to build their fundraising skills, look into sort of the opportunities out there, and apply for funding for projects and for opportunities, because It's expensive to try to do on your own. And we all know that the music industry isn't the most lucrative for a lot of folks. And so I think when there's opportunities there, knowing what's available and knowing how to get yourself, you know, funded is really, it's important. And it's something that I haven't done as a musician enough of, but I appreciate my fundraising background, because I think it'll serve me as I go into trying to build on my music as well.
Absolutely. That's great that you brought that up, because what I was actually noticing was in a couple of episodes that I've done on this podcast, we've all kind of brought up how the Canadian government or whoever runs the Canadian scenes or like, you know, the industries don't give in to creatives a lot. It seems like we're just getting the less of everything. It could be a biased opinion. But I talked to one guy last interview called Victor Crowell and some other people where I've had instances where they've said, no, grants just keep going to the same bands that are making it. Bands that don't even apply sometimes get calls and say, there's, you know, there's some money here, this and that. I obviously don't want to go out being the podcast that's bashing how Canada is treating their creatives and whatnot. And of course, there's a side to everything. So we can't just go out and say, oh, no, they're not doing anything. It's really great that you actually brought this up, because you've actually answered kind of what Canadians are doing wrong. And it's also that, you know, we're not getting taught how to do grants. We're not getting taught how to do this properly. If we did and we actually had the motivation, which it's very hard to get the motivation, because living in Canada, especially in Toronto, is not easy. It's very hard. And that's where you could get straight away from it and now automatically blame the Canadian government or blame, you know, the people that give you the grants or make up stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's great that you actually brought that up, because it's true. We never know. Sure, they could be giving money away to people that might not deserve it, or they could have a plan, or we could just not be doing it right. You know what I mean? Which is exactly.
Well, and I think it all points back to systems change. Like we need our systems to serve our communities better. And when they're only serving kind of the top 1% of whatever community that is, whether it's based on race or age or wealth or whatever, maybe in the music community, they're only serving the folks who already have the skills and know how to write the grants. But there's a ton of local, you know, small bands and musicians who would really benefit from gaining those skills, because maybe then they'll get those grants too. And if the same people are getting the money over and over again, it's because they already have built the relationship. They've already gained the skills to write the grant the right way so that they get chosen. And maybe they have those connections. And unfortunately, if we don't push to educate and build skills, you know, across the entire sector, the same folks are going to continue to get served by those outlets. And it's really important that we see that shift. But it starts with, you know, education. It starts with learning about what's available. And it's work. It's hard to put in the work. Like sometimes it's hard to sit down and research grant opportunities and plan out what your next project's going to be and write it in a format that's going to get you the money. And music is not always about money. Like I have not seen music as a lucrative thing for myself. I always consider it a side hustle and a passion.
Okay. So let me ask you, do you have any insight? Is there anything that you can tell the younger kids that would are listening or that would be in your position with their little guitar and singing their so little souls out? Could you give them any insight on how to keep going or on what to do within their career, whether it is tangible or just for what you do, a side hustle?
I try to take tips and tricks from so many different folks within the community. I think there's a lot of valuable insight out there. But one of the biggest pieces of advice that I try to remind myself of and give myself all the time, whether it's through learning a new instrument or writing and not thinking my songs are good enough, or, you know, getting nervous to perform a new big venue that I've never been on stage at, I try to remind myself like why I'm playing, why I'm singing, why I'm writing. It's not to like gain followers or make money or sell albums or any of that. Like why I do what I do is because music is truly just a part of what I love. I think like writing and being a songwriter is a form of self-expression. It's a form of healing. It's a form of sharing and spreading, you know, joy and sadness and all the feelings to all the people who are willing to listen. So for me, I think like the thing I've had to remind myself throughout all those years of learning to play and sing and perform and write has been to just not compare myself, not hold myself to any specific standard, not try to really smash the goal of how many venues can I play or how many listens can I gain on Spotify or any of that stuff, because that stuff makes me feel bad. But what makes me feel good is singing my heart out, getting my feelings out on paper and putting them to a song that I think is an actual really nice tune and that I really like. So I always try to remind myself why I'm playing music in the first place, because sometimes those things do get in your head and you feel that competitive drive, and then suddenly playing isn't as fun, and performing feels performative and it doesn't feel like self-expression. And so, yeah, I would say the biggest piece of advice I could give to young people who are navigating, entering the music scene, being a part of it, learning a new instrument, any big challenge, just try not to hold yourself to any specific standards, whether it's your own or standards that you're setting against others. Just try to do music because you love doing music and because you love, hearing the sound of a great song or writing your feelings down on paper. That's kind of my biggest piece of advice.
That's an amazing piece of advice. And I have to say, I love all of your answers. You're literally thoroughly giving the answer every way that you can with passion and love. And that's exactly what I love to hear. Like, this is exactly what creativity makes you do. You know what I mean? Even from the depths of the darkest times, you come up. It just brings you up. So it's beautiful to hear that. Thank you so much. It's awesome. So do you have are you writing any new music? I know it's not really like a career type thing, but I guess they just come when they come, right?
They do. They do. They come in
That's
waves, my
wicked.
friend. Sometimes when I'm feeling really bummed out, I could bust out a song in a day. I find like the times where I write the most is usually when I'm like going through the most shit, which typically lends itself to some pretty sad songs. But recently, I've just been writing about like funny things that have been happening to me, like breaking my ankle and being one of the clumsiest humans I know. I wrote a song about literally being a clumsy idiot, and so that's like one of
That's
my
lovely.
most recent ones. I also, I've written about navigating being single and new relationships and all of that. I've written about, the love that I have for the friend group that I've developed in this city. And so I've started testing myself to not just write when I'm sad and need that outlet, like I'm so upset that I need to put my words down, but like just write about the things that are happening every day around me. And it's been a fun challenge. I sometimes find that writing about happy stuff makes me sound really corny, whereas writing about sad stuff, I can feel really like raw and get the emotions out. So I'm challenging myself through lyrics and just through songwriting to try to find that sort of authentic feeling within the songs that are about like, yeah, tripping down the sidewalk or yeah, having fun with friends. So I am writing. I have a couple ideas for some singles that I'd like to release this year. So I'll probably start working on those at some point in the new year. I never give myself a hard deadline because I don't, like I said, I don't like holding myself to those standards. I just want to create as I create, and then when it's ready to be shared, it'll be shared. But yeah, I do have some songs in my back pocket. I'm looking forward to try to record a couple of them this year. And really, like goals this year, just to play more shows. I have my first gig with a full band and at the very end of 2022, and so I'm excited to try to kind of recreate that and have some more band moments. It's cool to hear my music brought to life by multiple folks on a stage. So yeah,
Absolutely.
that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Wicked, awesome. Well, I can't wait for that. I'm gonna definitely wait for that. That's gonna be great. Where plug yourself out a bit. Where can people find this new music and the old music or the EP Root Rot that's out?
Yeah, so I'm available on kind of all streaming platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, all that jazz. Look me up. It's just my name, Allie Redden. The Root Rot EP is just called Root Rot, so you can find it. It's four songs. So I hope you enjoy listening to it. I'm also playing at the Dive Shop on February 14th. So it's Valentine's Day. If you want to come hear me play some corny love songs, maybe a few sad breakup songs. I don't know if it fits the vibe, but I'll be playing a quick set on Valentine's Day there. So that's where you can come listen if you want to see me play live. And then hopefully I'll have some more shows lined up throughout the year, and I'll be popping around new venues in Toronto. And I'd love to see you there and some of the listeners there too.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'll definitely try and come there. Valentine's Day, I probably have some obligations, but maybe I can actually make it where that's my obligation. You know,
yeah,
what
it
mean?
Could be your date night. Bring your date, exactly. Bring your single friends. I don't know who's going to be out there listening and who's going to want to come by, but it's for lovers. It's for single people. It's for whoever. Just come enjoy some, some live music.
And I was going to say, unfortunately, whoever wants to disagree with me, go ahead and disagree with me, but you can't have love without heartbreak, no matter what. So don't ever feel bad about playing breakup songs or anything, because it's all a learning lesson, right? That's what
it
is.
True. And there are some beautiful love songs out there. I'll find a couple happy covers to pepper in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to skip the playlist game because we've been going, you know, and I think we've covered a lot. I don't want to wreck the beautifulness that is what we've created so far. But I will say one thing, and I will be the first one to sign up if you ever do this. You should definitely do side grant, like, writing courses.
I've really thought about that. Like, I feel like because of my background as a fundraiser, I'd love to just help other folks kind of position their projects to be attractive to funders. And I think there's a lot of skill behind it. And it's just, it's writing, it's practice writing your ideas in a really concise way where a funder is going to see, okay, here's the project, here's the timeline, this person knows what they're doing, so I'm going to put my money behind it and hope they create something cool. So I love this idea. I'm like brewing this idea in my mind, and hopefully at some point in the next few years when I have some more time on my hands, I can kind of create some services or some support for artists in the community, because I would love to be able to help folks, you know, make their projects into realities. And it is expensive. And so, yeah, I would love to do that as well.
Amazing. I think that's a great idea. I think a lot of people would jump on it. And I think we do need something like that. Personally, I think the government needs to fund something like that. But
there are some really cool grant writing workshops available to creatives out there. Good. Like, I think people... It takes effort to do some research, but once you start looking, there are services, there are opportunities, but you just have to put in the time and effort to, you know, sign up for that webinar and sit down and listen to somebody talk about, you know, grant writing's not sexy. Like, it's not attractive. It's not fun. You don't love sitting there putting all your work into words and holding yourself to timelines and reporting. But if you can do it and it gets you the funding and you're able to turn your music into something bigger and better, then I say go for it.
Yeah, if you want to turn your music into something bigger or better, you need to go for it. That's what it is. Yeah. Unfortunately, you need to. It's there for you, so do it, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, Ali, I love that I got to talk to you today. I'm very, very happy. I have a whole different mood set, a whole mindset. It's really great, and that's why I do this. I really do this to, like, feel and connect with the creative. So thank you for connecting with me today, and thank you for spreading the insight that we've spread. I hope that it definitely carries and journeys and helps someone that's listening. I really hope so.
Thank you so much for having me, Stevie. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate what you're doing with this podcast, really connecting folks within the community and spreading positivity, insight, tips and tricks, and also just really great music around the Toronto scene. So thank you as well.
Thank you. Do you remember how to close it off?
I remember. Yes, I am Ali Redden and I am Heartistic.
Hell yeah, you are. Thank you for listening, Toronto. Spill your hearts out and stay heartistic.
Thank you so much. Bye.